And this is my little spiel about it. A way to honor and embrace our Mother Earth, nourish and strengthen our families, and a tonic for our community. So I, as Julie said, Julie and Julie are here with the Garden Life Show. And today we have an awesome show with our native plant experts. It's a subject near and dear to my heart. And I know we have this great group in town, the Connect Connect Native Plant Society. And our fellows are both members of this society. I'll introduce first, Preston Andrews is the vice president of the club, and Bob Wilson is an owner with his wife Jill of Cedar Mountain Perennials Nursery in Athol. Welcome, you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank you for joining us, and I'd like to start with a quick bio of you two guys. Beginning with Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself, Bob.
Okay, well, thanks for having me, and thanks for touching on the subject of native plants. It doesn't get a lot of attention in the horticultural world, so it's a good opportunity here for us to do that. My wife and I, Jill, run Cedar Mountain Perennials. We started in 2010 down in Athol, and we've been selling native plants. We started selling up here at the farmer's market on Wednesdays and then at the Saturday market down in Hayden. We also do on-farm sales. We've been building the business. It seems like it gets a little bit better every year. So, people are getting more and more in tune with what native plants have to offer. I do have a background in horticulture. I have a degree in horticulture and a master's in entomology. My wife is a forest entomologist by training. So we have a variety of backgrounds that feed into this pretty well.
Well, great. And Preston, introduce yourself.
Again, thank you for having us here and being able to talk about native plants. I've been living in Sandpoint since 2011, so just about a little over 10 years now. And formerly a professor of horticulture at Washington State University in Pullman. I got started in plants, working with plants as a landscaper after military service. And decided that, planting is hard work, and it's still hard work, and I do a lot of it. But I went to college and graduate school and then spent some time in different parts of the world studying horticulture.
All right, great. I guess we'll begin with what is a native plant? Bob?
Well, I think the important thing to realize is that not everyone uses the same definition when they talk about native plants. Native plants are plants that do grow in the wild, so they're not plants that have been hybridized or cultivars or improved from the plants that grow in the wild. So they have to occur in the wild. The other important thing is that they're actually native to a geographical area, and I think that's where you get a lot of difference in opinion as to what your area is, whether it's just your local habitat or your local like the Idaho Panhandle. You might think native to Idaho Panhandle or maybe the inland Northwest or maybe even the Western U.S. These geographical boundaries are sort of something that are up to, I think, for personal choice. How strict you want to be about what is native and what's not native. And most importantly, I think natives don't include things that have been introduced that do grow in the wild now, but came from elsewhere, Europe and Asia primarily. A lot of our problem plants, which are weeds or even on the state's noxious weed list, are from other places. A native plant will never be on the noxious weed list because it belongs here. But these noxious weeds, we try to either manage them or keep them out of the area as much as possible.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so interesting because it really is sort of a spectrum. Those noxious weeds are native somewhere and then just expand here.
Exactly.
Yes, and the ones, and when we talk about region, there are many native plants, for example, Preston from Washington State or other points like Montana that will grow quite happily here, but maybe weren't here at first. Mm-hmm. Maybe?
The Native Plant Society has a publication on landscaping with native plants in the Idaho Panhandle. And it has a whole, listing of native plants that are available and their traits. And in that book, the Native Plant Society defines native plants as a plant that occurs naturally in the Idaho Panhandle, was present before European settlement, and is not a product of artificial breeding. So is northwestern Montana that different than the Idaho Panhandle? We have state boundaries, but plants don't really recognize those state boundaries.
Excellent.
So northeast Washington, northwest Montana, the Idaho Panhandle is a region that is ecologically unique in that it has many features of the coastal region. And they call it a coastal disjunct community because we have western white pine, or not western red cedar growing here that wouldn't typically be growing in this region because of our climate and our soils and all the other things that make up the region.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Interesting. I think back to the noxious weed. My very first project when I came here was a tansy wreath. And boy, did I get a lot of heat for that. I thought that was the prettiest flower. It didn't belong. So now going on, why are you two interested in native plants? What do they do for you?
Well, a lot of things. I like all plants, honestly. I'm not stuck on specifically on native plants. And certainly when you're landscaping, I don't feel like if you're landscaping with native plants, it has to be an all or nothing. You can always have some of your favorites. I love my lilacs. We have a nice patch of lavender, and those are not native, and they do well here. And even lavender, which attracts a lot of pollinators. So it doesn't have to be an all or nothing thing. But native plants definitely are probably the best at supporting our native ecosystems, and specifically our native insects and pollinators. And things like that. I think that's maybe that's I'll stop.
Sure, sure. That they're good for the insects that live here. They know what they recognize them and use them.
Another nice thing is that they're adapted to our region.
Sure.
Because they have grown up here for generations and generations. I'd like to speak from personal experience in my own city lot that's about a third of an acre, and it was a former Christmas tree farm. And when we bought the property, my wife Patty and I bought the property, it was mostly Scotch pine and very little else. It was very little biodiversity there, except for the landscaping that had been put around just the border of the house, like Fat Albert, spruce and lilacs and some holly and that kind of stuff. But since those Scotch pines died, we have planted many native plants and also a group of plants called nativars, which are native plants that have been bred into cultivars or cultivated varieties. But we still retain our lilacs and our lavender and that sort of thing. Last night we were doing a survey of what percentage of our landscaping is native now, nativar, and introduced cultivated plants. And we think we're about 60% native, maybe 20% nativar, and 20% lilacs and, lavender and things like that. So we, in 10 years, have transformed this lot from basically a monoculture of a Christmas tree farm into a biodiverse habitat for birds and insects. That's why I love native plants.
Biodiverse, that's a good word, because that is one of the key points of a native plant garden, is to have the diversity that the insects are looking for and the animals are looking for, and it makes it more encompassing to the flora and fauna of the area.
Sure does, and we can just launch right into some of the purposes of native plants in the garden, and it relates to birds and insects and everything. Would one of you like to talk about that?
I would just mention that recently we certified our property as with the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation as pollinator habitat. And anyone can do that. You have to answer some questions and verify, affirm that you have followed certain things. Those being growing a variety of bee-friendly flowers that bloom through spring through the fall, providing and protecting bee nest and caterpillar host plants, avoiding using pesticides. So those are the things that if you can do that, you can certify and let other people know, because you can get a sign put in your front of your property that indicates that you are a pollinator-friendly habitat.
That's neat. And for listeners who aren't aware of the Xerxes Society, it's a society that cares about insects, basically, our pollinators and everything else.
Yeah, all invertebrates, in fact.
Yes, great.
Yeah.
I think I might qualify, Julie.
Yeah, you should look into that.
You should see my messy yard. I bet yours would qualify, too.
Oh, I'm sure of it. That brings us to the pest control issue of the native plants. Do you find that you have pest problems, or are they all friendly or not so friendly?
Well,
How do you deal with that?
I tend to ignore pest problems as much as I can. I certainly don't use any pesticides in my garden. But if you have an active mini ecosystem in your yard, you will find that as pests come along, the things that eat the pests come along shortly afterwards. So usually in every spring, aphids come out in huge numbers. They'll get on any of your cherry trees or certain shrubs like the honeysuckles and the viburnums, and they'll get in the little leaf buds as the leaves develop, and they feed. The leaves get all curled up, and they just look awful.
Mm-hmm.
And most people would panic at that point. But I just let it go. And then the ladybugs come in, the serpent flies come in that have larvae that feed on the aphids. Green lacewings can come in, and there's other things as well. And before you know it, the aphids are pretty much gone. And then all the new growth that comes out on the end of the stem at that point looks normal, because the aphids have kind of run their course, and they're not really that much of an issue. So, I mean, that's one of the things that you can do with a native plant garden, and having a good diversity of flowering plants. You also draw in a lot of predators that feed on the pollen or nectar, especially on the nectar on some of these flowers. So they're drawn in for that, and that supports them while they go after some of these pests problems. So they all kind of work together that way.
The health of the garden, or the cycle of life, kind of comes in.
Right. And if I'm hearing you correctly, the native plants help that process quite a bit.
Yeah, and they do. And you have to... It helps to plan that out a little bit, too, because different insects need different kinds of flowers. So some like bees, are often more attracted to blue and purple flowers, but also will come to yellow and some other colors. Hummingbirds will come to red flowers, and different insects will come to different colors, also different sizes. Little insects go to little flowers, and big insects go to big flowers. I have some penstemons which have maybe an inch-long flower, and that's the bumblebees will get in there. They'll actually crawl right inside the flower, and so you need different sizes of things. And for what we call biological control, the use of insects to manage other insects, some of the most valuable things are tiny little wasps that you can hardly notice, but they will come and feed on tiny flowers, things like yarrow, things like any of the parsley family plants, though, like not native, but like dill and things like that. They need little tiny flowers to get the nectar to support them, and then they will go and attack the pest more effectively that way.
Fascinating. So we really need to keep our eyes open and watch for what's on our flowers and eating our pests. I'm going to pay better attention next summer.
Well, you should. I mean, that's sometimes what I do. I'll just go out in the garden when things are in bloom and just see what's happening and who's visiting and which flowers are getting the most attention, and see what's out there, because there's this, it's a tremendous diversity of insects, and there's this kind of they kind of travel under the radar for most of us.
Two that didn't travel under the radar for me this summer were, one was a hummingbird moth. Have you all seen those?
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
I had that at the same time as hummingbirds. It was pretty interesting to see that guy among the hummingbirds. And then recently, and I don't know if you all are having this experience, but praying mantis are all over my yard right now. It's
wow.
pretty neat. They're an mm-hmm. interesting bug.
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen one around here. I've seen them in Nebraska, but not here.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
So. Yeah, we do have them. Some of them are not native, actually. Some
oh,
of them have
oh.
been, introduced them. But they do. They still are a good predator.
Okay,
that's for sure.
Escaped out of someone's terrarium, I suppose.
I don't know how they got here. But.
Well, we've talked about pests, but what about water use? Do you feel that there's an advantage to native plants in the water-wise garden?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, something we, maybe on a bigger picture of things, native plants, since they are so well adapted here, they don't need a lot of inputs. So they don't need, they don't typically need a lot of soil amendments. They don't need a lot of watering. They don't need fertilizing. And like we've talked about pesticides, I think you can pretty much let things go, and the gardens will take care of themselves. So so we have both at these two sides of the same coin here, really, that the garden becomes very low maintenance because you don't have to do all this other stuff. But it's also... I lost track of my thoughts.
Low maintenance, but the water-wise, the roots go deeper.
It's also resource conservation. Conserving. So that's where I was going with
good.
That. It doesn't require all the water that a high-intensity landscape would.
I think one thing gardeners have to keep in mind is that they may be working with a soil that's not ideal when they plant native plants in their yards, and that the soil needs improving, usually with composting and organic matter, and also... weeds can be an issue during the early years of a native plant introduction into the landscape, because you still have a lot of bare ground that the weeds can grow in. So it's important that you probably water them the first few years. Fertilizer, probably if you use compost, you don't need to do that. But controlling weeds, because they can smother the native plants that you want to grow.
But hopefully once they get going, they can sort of hold their own.
Right. Once they start to cover most of the ground that you have, then they're going to shade out a lot of the weeds. Mulches are very good for weed control and also conserving moisture. And we use mulches throughout. Let your leaves from your trees, your deciduous trees, don't bag them and take them somewhere else, but spread them around your beds and let them become a mulch and a fertilizer eventually as they break down.
Just
and
like nature intended.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And a place for all those bugs to spend the winter.
Mm-hmm.
The good ones, we hope.
Yeah, and just on the opposite side of things, lawns, which a lot of people do have, are sort of the antithesis of native plant landscaping, because they offer practically nothing to any of our native insects or wildlife even, and they're very resource intensive. They require a lot of time. You have to mow once or twice a week. You have to water repeatedly, so they suck a lot of water off out of our aquifer and out of our wells and things that could go to other better uses, I think.
What about native grasses? Are there grasses that would possibly replace a lawn if people like the green?
Well, I guess lawns have their place.
Okay.
And the first thing I would recommend is that, because they're useful for a place to gather for kids to play and things like that. So I wouldn't say you have to get rid of all your lawn, but I try to minimize it as much as possible. I like to think of lawns as more like an area rug and not a wall-to-wall carpet.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good...
But that's, yeah, that's yeah. what you see in a lot of places. So you know, cut off all the edges and plant native plants around the perimeter, and then you'll have a much nicer environment to play.
And a lot less care. A lot less care.
Yes.
That's right. And we'll be going to song break soon, but... These native plants are beautiful. They're beautiful just in their natural form, so maybe they don't even require quite as much trimming and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what attracts me to them, is that I think they can hold their own. Many of them can hold their own against a lot of the things that are being sold in the nursery. So I think
I agree. My favorite part about the woods up here was all the learning all the natives and the diversity and just how everything was part of the trees and the woods here.
I think one of the things you have to, and as a gardener, you have to accept with native plants is a little bit more wildness in your landscaping, that it isn't going to be as manicured as an English garden maybe. So I think that's something you have to be willing to accept. And they have beauty throughout the year. They're unique, and they do support birds and insects that are native here. And they can add to your landscape even. We had, when we removed our Scotch pine, we had so many introduced native plants, mostly by birds, probably bringing in, like American cranberry bush. Hmm. We had that viburnum brought to us, and we never planted it, but it's there now.
Oh, that's great. Well, if you're listening to us, you're listening to the Garden Life Show here on KRFY. We're going to take a quick music break. We've got a couple of guests here with us, Preston Andrews and Bob Williams, and I'm here with Julie Calamine.
Yes.
Up now is...
Well, hang on a second,
yes,
Julie.
Okay.
Before we go right to song break, we're going to mention one more thing. We've been mentioning it during the morning shows, but we have begun the KRFY online auction, and it's easy to get to. You can go to Bidding for Good. That's easy to find on Google, or you can go to our website, and I think there's a link there, too. But Bidding for Good, we have a bunch of items, and some are really fun. One is a vacation in the Turks Caicos Islands. We offer that annually. A day fishing trip on the Kootenai. That was offered last year, and I will disclose that I will be your fishing guide if you go, and there are a bunch more. So if you get a chance, go to our online auction, Bidding for Good, and make a bid. A lot of good deals. And with that, we will go to a song break, and it's going to be...
I haven't heard this for a while.
And welcome back, KRFY listeners. You've been hearing us enjoying this song along with you. That was Wild Thing, and we are talking about wild things this morning. It's really fun, isn't it, Julie Brzezinski?
It is fun. We've got Bob Williams here and
Wilson.
And Preston Andrews here from Kinnickinnick Plant Society talking about native plants. And now we're going to talk about their favorite native plants, beginning with... please.
Well, I guess since our nursery is Cedar Mountain perennials, I got to talk about perennials there. That's really about 80% of what we grow are perennial plants, flowering plants, and it's hard to pick a favorite. There's so many good ones, but two things that we specialize at the nursery are penstemons. Penstemons are pretty much all native, except with a couple of exceptions to the western United States. And there are about 270 species all told. We're growing about 15 or 16 species at the nursery, so we have a good selection. Most of them are they're fairly sizable flowers with tubular flowers, so things can crawl in and collect their pollen and nectar. And that's always fun to watch. But most of them are blue to purple color. There are some that are pink, a couple that are magenta colors, sort of white to yellow for a couple of species. So there's a lot of variety there, too. So and some are kind of spreading like almost like a ground cover. Some are just stay as tiny little plants. So something little something there for everyone. And the other plant that we have a fair number of are the buckwheats. It's a genus Areogonum, and they are same family as the cultivated buckwheat, but this does not produce an edible seed. It's just an ornamental and mostly kind of creamy color flower to bright yellow flowers. But they're super drought tolerant. They're of all the species, maybe eight I've got out in my gardens now. Deer haven't touched any of them, so and we need to talk about deer. I think.
We haven't done that yet.
They're super drought tolerant. They're just easy to grow. So they're excellent for attracting pollinators. So they kind of check all the boxes.
Yeah, I use buckwheat as a winter seed. I'll seed my gardens, my fallow gardens with buckwheat just to get them. But some nutrients.
Yeah, and that's a different. That's not.
It's not a native. It's an annual buckwheat, but it's a cultivated plant there.
Okay.
But very useful for that purpose.
All right. Yeah. So a lot of good things about buckwheats, Bob. I've been to your gardens, your garden center, your landscaping place, and I did carry home some buckwheats, and I've got to tell you, they have been very easy to keep happy. So I have enjoyed them a lot.
Oh, good.
We've had good luck with yarrows, and kinnikinick is amazingly tough plant, and it spreads very well. We talk about non-invasives, but a goldenrod can really go to town. So if you need to contain a plant, goldenrod would be a tough one because it really spreads. But as far as trees and shrubs, what we've had really good success with is we have ponderosa pine, grand fir, Western white pine, actually, some of those, mountain ash, serviceberry, western red cedar. And for our shrubs, dogwoods are excellent here in town. Snowberries, they go like crazy. Ninebark, Rocky Mountain juniper is kind of a tree shrub. Spireas, willows, ocean spray, elderberry, Oregon grape, wood rose, twinberry, or Utah honeysuckle. So all of these plants are really, really nice.
I haven't heard syringa mentioned.
Oops.
That's a pretty popular one.
It's the state flower.
Yes.
Of course. It's a mock orange. It's a type of mock orange. It's called syringa. It's certainly grows well here. Has the white and very, very fragrant flowers. So it's very nice.
And I have to tell you all a funny story about syringa, because I moved from Minnesota about 7.5 years ago, and I was out hiking somewhere, and it was that time of year when the syringa are blooming. And I'm out walking with my husband, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Daniel, these mock oranges are naturalizing everywhere. Who planted them? And I finally learned, of course, that they are native here, but not in Minnesota. So I was assuming they had come and been planted by someone. Very funny. Embarrassing, too.
It's kind of fun. You know what time of spring it is, depending on what's blooming, the ocean spray, then the syringa.
Yeah.
And kind of you can learn your plants by which one goes first and who comes after.
Yeah, exactly. We have like a whole parade of white flowering shrubs here, starting with the serviceberry, and then we get into, I'm not sure exactly the order, but ninebark and chokecherry and syringa. And then you wind up the season way into July with the ocean spray.
Yes.
So you have a whole series of things. So it's good to plant like maybe one of each.
Yes, what a great idea.
I have the native maple in my yard that just sends seed everywhere. I have hundreds of native maple plants every spring, and it takes a lot of trim. It can tolerate trimming. So we've got it trimmed up and topiaried, and it's been really a fun plant for us.
Preston.
I think one of my favorite hikes to do is the Mackinac Trail, because if you do start that in May and you continue through into July, you will see this progression of bloom from native plants. And even, you know, I've hiked up there in the snow in, January and February, and the ocean spray seed heads are still hanging there beautifully. Mm-hmm. It's just a lovely place to go because you've got the change in elevation, different directions that the slopes face, and the wetland up near the top that's got very unique alder and things like that. So it's a great place to see all those native plants that grow in our region.
That's a great suggestion, Preston. We've covered some trees that are nice natives and some shrubs and just a few ground covers. Do you have a few other ground covers that you enjoy having in your home landscapes?
I can think of a couple, but the Kinnikinick is really one of the best. It's really by far, I think, the best ground cover. But we have one of the buckwheats does make a nice ground cover. There are plants called pussy toes, which are gray foliage plants. They grow flat on the ground, prefer a little bit of shade if they can get it, although they grow out in some pretty dry country too. They have a flower, sometimes not the most showy flower, so I think their nicest feature is this just gray mat-like foliage. So that's a couple of other options.
Some native sedums, I would think. Rock.
Wild strawberries.
Oh, yes, wild strawberries.
We haven't even talked about the berries.
Yeah. And it really depends on how much traffic the ground cover is going to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kinnikinick is pretty tough.
And evergreen.
Yeah, and some of the others are maybe a little more fragile if your dogs are running on it or you're walking a path through
it. Good point. They're low, but maybe not suitable for traffic.
Correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Ground cover is nice because it keeps the weeds out, you know.
Mm-hmm. For the most part.
For the most part.
I mean, weeds are going to be ever-present. There's always going to be some, but like we've talked about, if you can develop a pretty complete foliage cover with your plants and keep good, do a good job of getting rid of the weeds that do show up before they drop seeds, that's the key piece there.
Right.
Over time, you see a lot fewer weeds.
And a mature garden. Once you've been there a while,
it helps.
It does
help. Take care of it. Let's talk native vines. I have a few favorites. How about you guys?
Well, I like the honeysuckle.
Of course.
That's a beautiful plant.
Yes.
The twinberry. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, there aren't a lot of native vines. There's a couple clematis species and the orange-flowered honeysuckle. Mm-hmm. And that's I think our choices in that category.
Those are my choices. I guess I didn't know there were only two.
Yeah.
And ferns. Ferns are all over this country.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds. Do
yeah.
you sell a few different ferns?
I don't. I'm actually learning how to grow ferns from spores, but I'm not. I'm just starting that. I would have to purchase starts to grow, to be able to sell ferns. So I purchase some starts and grow them onto a nice sized plant. But they're very, very, not very available. Hmm. So I got some Western sword fern spores germinating now.
Wow.
But the plants are almost microscopic. I don't know how far this is going to go at this point. So we'll see. But it's fun. I mean, it's one of the things I enjoy about growing plants, and it's that it's I feel like I'm always breaking new ground. It's like you can't just go to a book and like a cookbook and read a recipe on how you do this. It's a lot of learning and a lot of record keeping and
constant
and so
experiment.
Forth.
Sounds
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly that.
Well, we should mention, as we're sitting here live in the studio, there's a package sitting between Bob and Preston. And Julie and I were curious about that when the gentleman came in and we learned what they were. Tell us.
Well, one of the plants that we started in our pollinator garden, which is an important plant for monarch butterflies, is milkweed. As probably most people have heard, the importance of milkweed. One of our members actually has designed and helped install a butterfly way station with milkweed and other monarch butterfly plants up in Naples, up north of Sandpoint. So milkweed, just interesting pods. They open up and there's all this cottony parts that hang on the seed. And Bob wanted some from our garden, and we have lots of them.
But that is a non-native to the area.
No, that is native.
Oh, it is native.
It is native.
I've never seen
It's not real common around here. I see a little bit of it along the shores of Lake Ponderay, but then I see you drive down 95 going south from Sandpoint, and there's a couple places where there's just a little patch along the highway growing out in pretty sunny, dry country. So it's kind of interesting that it's made its way there at all.
Right.
Very specific habitat for that.
I feel like I've seen it as we head over toward Montana. I was in Libby this summer a few times, and I remember seeing more milkweed there than I would notice around here.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of it in eastern Washington as well, but not a lot of it right around here. It's not real common. But
Well, something to work on, gardeners.
Yeah.
Yes.
Get your milkweed going.
That brings up the point of saving seed and using that seed to propagate new plants, and Bob, being a nursery man, maybe could inform us a little bit about how milkweed would be germinated and grown to make new plants.
Well, actually, milkweed's pretty easy compared to some of the others, but I do, you know, over the years, we've been planting a lot of our plants in our own garden, and which is, so we have a demonstration garden that people can come and look at. But also, it gives me a resource to collect seeds for my own plants. So, you know, when I started the nursery, we purchased a lot of seeds and did some wild seed collecting. But now I can get a significant amount of seeds from my own gardens. So I collect my own seeds.
And that leads to a really important topic, which is, where do we gather our wild plants and native plants? We don't necessarily want to just run out and dig them up out of any place in the forest, do we?
Yeah. No, that's often not very successful, even if you could do it, but it's not a good idea. It would be considered theft if you were
yes.
if you're taking plants off of public lands or off of even other people's private lands. On the other hand, collecting seeds, there's a few restrictions for collecting seed off of private lands or public lands. As long as you're aware of that what you're collecting, and you're not collecting something that might be protected or threatened in any way.
All right. But, so some seeds are okay, but not transplanting.
We're
not
I wouldn't to be suggest digging. Transplanting. And I collect some seeds. I collect a few stem cuttings also, because it leaves the plant intact essentially. So it's not really doing any major amount of damage.
Makes sense.
But and you can collect seeds for your own use. If you want to start collecting seeds and selling seeds, then you're into a different realm, and you would need permits for that to do that.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So our favorite native plants we've discussed, and we've also discussed a little bit about care for the natives once you get them in your garden, that they don't need a lot of water. They don't need pest control because you're trying to get that cycle of life going. But they do need a little bit of water to begin with. You can't just stick them in the ground and not maintain them or care for them at all. So that those are some care for the native plants.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Go ahead, Preston.
I think one of the things most of us gardeners face is that we are growing, if we're growing native plants, we're probably also growing a garden. You know, we have apples, pears, plums, raspberries, vegetables, tomatoes, everything. And those plants, of course, are not native, but they're concentrated in an area that's separate from our landscaping, although adjacent to it. So there might be some benefit that the native plants provide to your garden, but there also could be pests that transfer from your garden into the native plant as well. So we have to recognize that as gardeners, we're managing landscapes. And whether it's a native plant landscape or a vegetable fruit garden landscape, we have to be engaged and watch for invasives, especially weeds that are invasive and noxious, because they can spread other people's property. And that's something we definitely don't want to get. You'd be a bad neighbor.
Yeah, and if I could say one other thing here, it's really important when you're planting native plants, they don't all have the same requirements. So it's important to match the plant to the setting that you're putting the plant in. If it's going to be a real dry setting, you want plants that are pretty drought tolerant. And not all native plants, just because they grow here, are drought tolerant. There are some, like the asters, like the mountain hollyhock, that grow in generally moist ground. The monkey flower grows in seeps and things along up in the mountains. So plants like those, you know, if you put them in a, they're not drought tolerant, so they're not going to work in a drought tolerant garden. And you probably don't want to mix them in with drought tolerant plants, because that means you need to water that piece of the garden. So you can plant. So to be successful and to be resource conserving, you need to pick plants that are going to do well in the setting that you have, and you need to consider the amount of sun, as well as the amount of moisture they're going to get. But yeah, to get to your point, when you put a new plant in the ground, they're going to need pretty regular watering. For perennial, I like to say, yeah, once you get them through the first summer, they're pretty much self-sufficient after that. For trees and shrubs, they can take a couple of years, sometimes even more, before that you'll need to really baby them along before they have enough of a root system to support themselves and keep going on their own.
Very important information. We can't just assume every native plant wants to live where you're going to put it. And I've experienced that. And had to replant things.
You have to look at the habitat.
That's right. Oh, we're starting to come to a conclusion, we're going to want you all to offer us your contact information and other resource information. And Preston, why don't you go ahead and start, just mention the Plant Society and some of the resources, as in your great book.
Right. The Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society has published a book that is called Landscaping with Native Plants in the Idaho Panhandle. We are a nonprofit, so we support our programs, our outreach programs to children and families. We have tree tours at our arboretum, which is behind the Bonner County History Museum, at the end of Ella Street in Sandpoint. And this book will tell people how they're adapted. Just as Bob was saying that some plants are from wetlands or moist settings, the book will describe in that which plants are from dry and are drought tolerant, which plants are not. So that's really a great resource that we use all the time. And Bob's one of the co-authors on the book, and so there's a lot of expertise that went into it. We have a website, nativeplantsociety.org, www.nativeplantsociety, all strung together, .org. And then we have a Facebook page. We have monthly programs at the library, Sandpoint Library, except for winter and midsummer. And
you're also very active at the Arboretum.
And
it's
we have
a great
an Arboretum.
Place to
yeah.
learn about our native plants. And they're labeled.
They're labeled, and we're always working on it. We always need help to maintain it. So if anybody would like to come out and garden with native plants and learn more about them, then that's a great place to come.
Truly.
And speaking of resources, Bob, tell us about your webpage, which is full of information.
Yeah, we have a lot of information. I would like to add, if you want to learn more about how native plant gardens can look, a visit to the Arboretum is really valuable. And then we also do have demonstration gardens at our nursery in Athol. So, if you're out hiking, just sometimes seeing how native plants grow together gives you inspiration for how they may look in your yard. I mean, that's kind of how I got started in this whole business, was that I'd be out hiking and I see this great plant. I say, that would look great in my yard. So eventually I got into the nursery business and growing them. Cedar Mountain Perennials is our nursery. We do have a website at cedarmountainperennials.com, all one word. We sell our plants at the nursery. We're closed for the season, unfortunately, so we'll be open either late April or early May, depending on how the season goes. But we'll be open at our nursery on Fridays. We sell at the Hayden, or the Kootenai County Farmers Market in Hayden on Saturdays. But we also sell our plants up here in Sandpoint at the, we put on a native plant sale with the Native Plant Society.
When is that? May? Sometime it's, in May, isn't
it? It's June. It's first Saturday in June. Okay. So, and that's over at Lakeview Park. It's right next to the Arboretum. So if you haven't been there, it's a good chance to wander around that garden as well. So that'll be the first Saturday in June.
Not to be missed. It's a great sale.
Yeah.
And finally, Bob and Preston, please give us your antidote of the week. What it is it about your garden that really feeds your soul? Preston?
I think designing and creating a habitat for wildlife to flourish and to spend time in that habitat, either just relaxing in the evening or working in the garden, that feeds my soul. I'm a plant nerd, so I mean that's
nice.
That's what hits me in the heart. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Oh, I'm a plant nerd too, so we're all in this together. For me, it's flowers. I like to see the flowers. I like to see them blooming. I actually have a photograph that my dad took when I was 2 years old. I'm sitting down. I got a flower in my hand. I'm picking the petals off of it because this is what little boys do. I've been attracted to flowers and fascinated by flowers all my life. So I like seeing them bloom. And in the nursery, I think one of my most exciting times of year is when I plant seeds. And I go out and check them every day, and I see what's coming up and what's doing well and what's not doing well, and it's what I really, really thrive on.
It's going. Julie, we've heard that again and again.
Yes.
The fascination with the seed bursting into life.
That's right. It's all right there. It's all a perfect world in there.
That's right. What about you? What's your antidote this week?
Well, native plants have always really touched me when I first moved out here and saw all the wild country. It was just so vast, so much diversity, and then all the wildlife living amongst it, the flora and fauna. It's a fantastic world out there.
Oh, my gosh. My antidote is going to sound so boring after you three. I might even skip it. I was just going to say that getting out and collecting some mushrooms this time of the year is an antidote, and it is.
It is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Preston and Bob, for joining us today. And we have another song coming up here. And we'll be back with the Garden Life Show with a little extra at the end here.
We do. We've got a little extra interview. Well, thank you very much, Bob Wilson and Preston Andrews. You've been a great addition to our garden life. Have a great day. And for Preston, we have Tom Petty, Wildflowers.